So we're going to interrupt our discussion of financial woes, political rows, and all the rest to bring you a dream come true. From the first time I caught his comedy act a long, long time ago.
Hey, this guy's good. I'm a Ramblin' guy.
I always thought, well, Steve Martin is a genius in comedy and writing and acting. But that banjo thing. I mean, wouldn't it be fun to get a banjo lesson from the comedy banjo screenwriting dude himself? I mean, that would be wild and crazy.
When you want genuine music, music that will come right home to you, ramify your whole constitution like the measles, and break out on your hide like pin feather pimples on a pick goose, when you want all this, just smash your piano and invoke the glory beaming banjo.
That's Steve Martin doing the narration, quoting Mark Twain there, from a new documentary, Give Me the Banjo, airing tonight on PBS. It's a great film that makes a compelling case that the banjo's history is also America's troubled history. And it gave me an opportunity to wander uptown to Martin's apartment, bring my own humble banjo, and sit down and maybe get some pointers.
It's in G. C. Right.
And you know, there's just something about the banjo. Conversation starter, five strings of pure friendliness. Martin, you see, fell in love with the banjo long before he knew any of its history.
Well, the only history I knew of it was anecdotal when I picked it up. I knew that it had roots in Africa, but that it was, I think the only other completely American instrument was the saxophone. Subsequently, all this history has been researched on the banjo, and it did come over from Africa. It was had a forerunner, a kind of a three-stringed gourd instrument. But the way you see it now is completely American. And the other erroneous history, I knew the fifth string was put on around 1850 by Joel Sweeney. And then I went to the British Victoria and Albert Museum, and I saw a banjo with a fifth string on. It was dated 1820. Maybe the fifth string came first.
Yeah.
But I should tell the listeners that the fifth string is this weird...
The little one.
It's a half string. It only goes up half the neck. And it's sort of a drone.
Drone meaning that you're constantly hearing this note.
And it's rarely fretted, although now in modern banjo playing, it's fretted a lot by sophisticated players.
Pete Seeger came up with the term hammer-on and pull-off.
Right. I learned that
from this documentary.
Right.
That's, mm-hmm. I mean, Pete Seeger's got a lot of legacy.
He's very proud of that.
Well, I would be too. Can you demonstrate? Because I feel so pathetic trying to demonstrate with you holding a banjo.
It's just simply... That's a hammer-on and a pull-off. At the same time, you're going, and you're hammering on with your left hand, and then if you want to pull off, you're striking it with your right hand and then pulling off with your left. So you can go. There's like two hammer-ons and a pull-off in that, and you can fill in with all these extra notes that you wouldn't get otherwise. It speed it up, you don't even hear it. There's many, many pull-ons and hammer-offs in that little section.
I sense that there's a quality of the banjo that speaks to your sort of upbeat humor, but also you have a very meticulous, orderly personality, it seems
to me. Well, I really just got into the banjo because I loved it. It, as the cliche goes, it spoke to me. And I loved the tempo of it, that it was fast. And then I loved it more when I found out it could be slow. I learned three-finger style, scrug style, because it was fast. And then when I learned about clawhammer style, I loved it because it could be slow. and I thought, oh, I have to learn that style too because I loved it just as much.
And it's a trip back in time if you do the finger-picking style, which I do poorly here.
Yep, right.
That's the modern style, but the clawhammer stuff is... which is also hard and maddening in its own way, is
well,
much
you know,
more
everything
ancient.
Can be as hard as you want it to be. You can make it hard. There's some great clawhammer players, and there are great three-finger players. You know, that's what television is for. You just sit with the banjo in your hand, and you watch television, and you keep going over those moves over and over and over and over and over for hours and hours.
You've identified my secret as well. I need to watch much more television,
I think.
How does banjo playing go with all the rest of your sort of creative outlets? Is it a relief from those, or is it is it integral to all of them?
Well, you know, I can't imagine my life without it, let's put it that way, because You know, show business is one thing. Acting is one thing. You meet a certain type of person, and they're all so great, you know. And then there's the music world. And then there's the art world that I'm interested in, which has nothing to do with show business. And what I find most thrilling about all these worlds is they're artists. They're all artists. And it's expanded my life in so many ways. It's really the people. I remember when I first started doing comedy, my comedy act, I really put the banjo in because I needed material and I needed time. So I worked out comedy routines with the banjo. And then later, when I really didn't need the banjo for time, I kept it in because what I was doing as a comedian looked so haphazard and accidental. I wanted something in the show that looked hard, so the audience wouldn't think it was, completely accidental and haphazard. But, you know, playing music on stage was a real dream of mine, and I did it when I was an opening act, because I used to tour with the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, so I was their opening act, and then I would come up on stage and play for a song or two at most. But I really liked it. And now, essentially, I'm a band leader.
More than a band leader, Martin and his band were named International Bluegrass Music Association Entertainers of the Year this year. And Steve gave us a song, which you're hearing now. You can hear the full version and see photos from our jam session on the web. We'll continue our discussion with Steve Martin in just a few minutes. Stay with us. Continuing our conversation with International Bluegrass Music Association Entertainer of the Year, Steve Martin. He does some other entertaining stuff as well. I spoke with him earlier this week in his New York City apartment about the new documentary he helped put together, Give Me the Banjo, airing tonight on PBS stations. The banjo has always been with Martin from the first moment he wanted to entertain anyone, and it turns out he grew up with banjo legend from the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, John McEwen.
We've been friends since high school.
I know.
It was my first pathway to the banjo. And I found out, I got interested in the banjo independently, and then I found out one of my friends had hootenannies at his house and was playing music. And it was through him I got my first banjo.
Oh, that's such a great story. And he's just such an amazing virtuoso.
He plays
Soldier's
all the
Joy,
yeah.
The tune on the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band album, Will the Circle Be Unbroken?
I think his recording of Dixie is one of the most emotional and beautiful recordings ever made of it.
And you stay in touch, obviously?
Yeah. He produced my first album, The Crow.
I've done a lot of interviews about a lot of things, and one time, you obviously remember the movie Parenthood, right?
Sure, yeah, I was in it.
You were in it.
It'd be bad if I
didn't. Exactly. And the writers for that movie I interviewed one time for a profile.
Lowell Gans and Bobalu Mandel.
Gans and Bobalu, yes. That's right. And they said something about you that I it's stuck in my mind and I've always wanted to ask you about. They said, and it's very complimentary, they said that they were just astounded at the power of your acting, because when they were doing the movie Parenthood, they were parents. I don't believe you necessarily were.
And no,
they,
I wasn't. Yeah.
They saw your sort of physical connection with children on the set to be something not intuitive, not as a natural parent.
Mm-hmm.
That you were, it seemed to them, almost freaked out by the presence of lots of kids. But when the cameras rolled and when you got into character, you transported yourself in a way that they could not even believe.
Well, I, at that time in my life, I saw children as objects.
Yes, they noticed. They noticed that.
So, but acting is another thing. You know, that movie was where I first got comfortable with children.
Really?
And it's funny. There's an old saying that shrinks use that intent brings emotion. And that's sort of what happened on that movie. You know, you're in a scene and you have this intent in the scene, and the emotion actually follows. And it's really opened a lot of doors for me emotionally toward children, that being a parent in the movies. Not just that, many movies since.
As a writer, though, and as an art collector, where do those worlds fit? Or are they just independent examples of this art world that you love so much, this being an artist?
Well, writing, I think, is just a part of my comedy. And it came from my comedy and came up from a love of creativity. And it came from, as you creep along as an artist, writing for my comedy act led to writing screenplays for my movie act.
Mm-hmm.
And then writing screenplays led to writing plays, and that led to writing prose. And here I am. And I had always written songs for the banjo.
Making stand-up, making music, what's harder?
Well, like I say, everything's as hard as you want it to be. But in the music show, I do comedy, but it's at a better pace than I used to do it because it was constant comedy. Now it's broken up by a song, and it took me a while to learn that when I play a song, I'd look out at the audience and I could see some people closing their eyes and bobbing their heads, and I thought, oh, they actually enjoy this. and I thought, oh, I can relax. I don't have to be always on. I just have to think of the music and
you know, the laughs are a key that people are enjoying things too.
Yes, yeah, right.
Laughter,
but it was, you know, with comedy, it's like, well, that went well, but what's next?
Exactly. No kidding.
You know,
you don't leave whistling a joke, I suppose.
Right.
The theater.
Yeah. And this has been really, really nice. And I like doing a show. I really like that. We do about 21 songs in the show, and a lot of people we play to have probably never heard bluegrass before, except incidentally or accidentally.
Do you think
many have, by the way,
because
they know what it is, and they know that you can applaud the breaks and the mandolin and the fiddle, and
exactly, they know the rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, what do you want people to get from this documentary about the banjo? It certainly is an exploration, and I learned so many things, even though, you know, I've had a banjo for years. I'm not terribly good, but it's just so wonderful to just sit and play the banjo and notice that time slows down.
Well, I think that, you know, in anyone's life, if you're musical, it enriches your life, whether it's banjo or piano or anything. But that's got nothing to do with the documentary. The documentary is to really inform people about the history of the five-string banjo and also to bring them up to date with what's going on, because a lot of people are really stuck with the stereotypical sound of the banjo, relating it to kind of a hillbilly image that's slightly embarrassing. And by the way, I'm not putting down hillbillies. I'm putting down... They're thinking it's too unsophisticated for me. And actually the banjo is quite sophisticated. And there's incredible musicianship. In fact, when I first started learning to play in the 60s, the professional level was very high. When I came back into it in the early year 2000, I had noticed that the professional level was at the level of Carnegie Hall. And it's really another instrument now. And they're doing concertos with it and this and that. Not that, you know, that makes it a big deal, but they're making beautiful, beautiful music on the banjo and stirring a music, melodic music. You know, I'm a big promoter.
And when they came to you to do the narration, it's like, wow, we could get Steve Martin. I mean, there are any number of banjo players that they could get. Are you like a emissary from planet Earth or an emissary to planet banjo?
I guess I'm famous. And,
right, there we go.
Yeah.
Duh.
Yeah. And so, you know, I guess I'm the one right now, although there's other famous people coming up. Ed Helms plays the banjo.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to, you know, I'm in banjo world right now, and I'm on stage making music, and I'm going around the country touring and playing music and doing shows. I don't want the audience to think if they come, I turn my back on the audience and play 31 songs and then go walk off and never say hello. We actually do a really fun show. In fact, I'm very proud that we won the IBMA, that's the International Bluegrass Music Association, Entertainer of the Year this year. Just, we were really, really excited, and that's a very big deal, you know, because it's a tight group. You know, they're very cautious about whom they give awards to, and so we were very, very proud of that.
Oh, that's
and
great.
We tend to exploit that to the ends of the
earth. Yeah, well, just to work it, baby. Well, would you, as the International Bluegrass mm-hmm. Music Association Entertainer of the Year, would you indulge me with just a couple of measures of Groundhog?
I can give it a try.
What a nice guy to endure playing Groundhog with me there. And he gave me a few pointers. Use your second finger more, John. Relax your wrist. And don't forget to double thumb. You can see photos of our friendly little session and hear a solo performance from Steve in his New York City apartment all over at thetakeaway.org.
Close enough.